This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I do subscribe, however, to the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. It shows up automatically in my phone every day when the show is over, and you miraculously pump that sucker out like right away. Like, wow, we've already determined what the best of is. It's beautiful. Well done.
Should I kind of break down about how the sausage is made a little bit?
No, you can if you want, but I want to get to let's do that another time.
Okay.
People don't need to know.
All right.
Do you want to know what goes in a sausage? Really?
If it tastes good.
Yeah, but do you want to know what goes into it?
Probably
not. There's a lot of things that taste good, and we might not want to know really what's
probably
in it.
Probably not.
So anyway, I subscribe to it. You should too. All right. So every day at 1 o'clock, we let you guys decide what we want to talk about. Let me throw phone numbers out here if you want to talk about this. 919-860-5326, 919-860-5-FAN, if you will. And the question today is, should the NFL appeal the Deshaun Watson suspension? It's a yes or it's a no. That's all. Should the NFL appeal the decision, yes or no? And my answer to the question was no, they should not. For two reasons that I've already pointed out. 919-860-5326. The first is that if Roger Goodell does it on his own, then we are back to where we were before the last collective bargaining agreement, in which Goodell was argued accused of being the proverbial judge, jury, and executioner. Mm-hmm. He decides what's important, he makes his ruling, and then he decides whether or not his ruling was great. Well, we can all do that. You know, we'd all like to be, it's almost like being a parent.
Yeah.
Except maybe not today.
Well, it's like appealing to the officer who just gave you a ticket, you know?
You, sir, you're right. So that's the Goodell part of it. And the other part of it is that if you do farm it out, because he doesn't have to rule on it himself, if you farm it out and you get the exact same response that, Judge Robinson, 6 games, sounds about right, then ultimately, you have that much more egg on your face. Mm-hmm. And then you also have the time that it's taken to get to this point. But I contend, and the judge in her ruling sort of confirms, that this is what the NFL deserves for the way that they have ultimately not treated women, but allowed women in their atmosphere to be treated. Whether it's the cheerleaders for the Washington Commandos, or it's the spouses and girlfriends of players in their league. Just general behavior, the NFL has done a terrible job in protecting women. They have oftentimes used women to investigate. So the investigation of the Washington Commandos was done by a woman, right? And the NFL has no written report because they don't want one. We had a written report on the deflation of footballs. All right, what, like 50 pages on deflating a football? We got that, but we can't get a written report on the absolute abuse of women within the Washington football team's organization, including the women who wanted their own abusive behavior, you know, the behavior that was abusive towards them, including those women wanting it to be public. They wanted it public. Forget about a written report. They wanted everybody to know. And we don't have that. So in a way, I look at this as Judge Robinson going, yeah, you guys have been jackasses forever. So this is what you get when you are, you lick your finger and you put it up in the air and you go, which way is the wind blowing?
Yeah.
That's been the NFL. That's been the NFL when it comes to these types of decisions, these types of incidents.
Well, something that was interesting that I saw earlier today, I believe the Pro Football Talk tweeted out that the NFL on their communications website had their conduct policy posted, but now you go to look at and it's not there.
Right.
Interesting.
That is true.
Interesting.
So, look, there's no way. Let me just look at it from this angle, too. If the NFL appeals to Roger Goodell, what's he going to do here? He's certainly not going to suspend him for a year. No shot at that happening. Zero shot at that happening. So what would the NFL be basing their decision on? What would they be basing it on? Mm. The Roger Goodell decides, you know what? 10 games. All right, 10 games. Now what? Now what? Like, it's 4 more games. I get it. He's still playing. When he comes back, he's still an embarrassment to your league. Mm-hmm. So, I'm not saying the NFL. I think the NFL was right to argue for a lengthier suspension. But I think their better move here is to simply suck it up, take the L, and move on, and maybe go about the business of considering the women that operate in your NFL orbit. Maybe do that. I'm not sure the NFL has that capability. I'm really not. Now, Will, when we talked to him about it, brought up the case of the Dallas Cowboys and their former VP of PR, Rich Dalrymple, who was spying on cheerleaders, looking through freaking peepholes. Like, what? What is this, an episode of Porky's? It's a new movie. Like, he's looking through peepholes, and he's, like, taking pictures underneath the owner's daughter's skirt. Like, what? How old are we? Are we all 15? That's what's going on around some NFL teams.
Mm-hmm.
The league doesn't discipline their own owners, so why should we be disciplining players?
Yeah.
Look, Deshaun Watson's just a creep. He's always going to be a creep in the eyes of many, many people, and he'll have to deal with that. And maybe he doesn't care. Maybe he's convinced himself that he's not a creep. But there were 30 lawsuits filed against the Texans. They knew what was going on. They helped him with non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah.
Which is why they're in the line of fire, why they settled all 30 lawsuits. He has settled 23 of the 24 lawsuits. Look, if you were going to settle them, you probably should have settled them a year and a half ago. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that. But you can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuda.
David Hale from ESPN.com. You can follow him on Twitter at a David Hale joint. I would call him the Spike Lee of ACC reporters. I'm not sure that's accurate or not. We'll let David decide. He joins us on the Adam Gold Show. I just saw you huddling up with every coach and a lot of players in a little corner of the of the Wyndham, not the Wyndham. What was it? Was it the Wyndham in Charlotte? That's where we were. The Westin in Charlotte. That's where we were. I forgot where we were. As you and Andrea Adelson get little private settings with these coaches. How you doing, man? It's nice to talk to you. I don't think we really spoke at all when we were all down in Charlotte.
It was a whirlwind, if you will. They called it, what did they say? Well, we had a promenade. They said that we would be located in the promenade. What it really was we got a little like corner space between the trash can and the bathrooms.
Right.
And so they just set us up there in the promenade.
Perfect spot to come out there. All right. So I know you and Andrea did a Twitter spaces for basically criticizing everybody's all ACC picks. And that's fine because they're all guesses at this point anyway. I mean, I almost felt bad making any predictions because we haven't seen anybody play yet. What criticisms do you have of, well, just go with the standings. We'll start there.
I don't really have super big criticisms with any of the standings. I mean, they picked the consensus picks were Miami and Clemson. That's who I picked. Do I feel good about that? No, I do not feel good about that. We all pick Miami every year, yeah. and it all just to be wrong. As I said to Andrea today, I like to be wrong with other people. So that way my idiocy sort of blends in with the crowd. So that's kind of where my general pick was. It is interesting that Pittsburgh and Wake Forest played for the conference championship last year, and neither of them got significant hype for mm-hmm. doing it again this year. In fact, Wake Forest picked to finish third in the ACC Atlantic behind NC State. And the most fascinating thing about that is pretty much every argument you can make for why NC State should be good this year is also true of Wake Forest. And Wake Forest was the one that actually won 11 games and the division last year. So I think, again, as you said, it's the preseason. None of us really know anything. If you go with Miami and Clemson, you are picking the two teams that probably have the most talented rosters based on recruiting values, et cetera. And that's, at this point in time, that's probably what we can be the most certain about.
Yeah, look, it's easy to take the teams with the most talent. I mean, but Clemson had the most talent last year.
Yeah.
And you could argue that Miami, I don't know, maybe Miami didn't have the most talent. Maybe Pitt did have the most talent on that side of the bracket. But clearly, I mean, based on recruiting and reputation and all of that, those are the easy picks. I really have no complaints if, like, some people pick Carolina. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Not sure who's going to be their quarterback, but that's okay too. We didn't know who Miami's quarterback was going to be until Tyler Van Dyke took over midseason, and then he became great. Where do you fall on the Devin Leary versus Sam Hartman versus Tyler Van Dyke versus everybody else decision?
I mean, look, it is a good thing for the league that they're going to have quality QB play this year. And really, I think the only two schools where you don't feel at least somewhat optimistic about the QB situations are probably Virginia Tech and Duke. And even Virginia Tech, I mean, it almost has to be better than it has been the last couple of years, even if it's not good. And I remember we posed the question to Mike Elko, what do you got at QB? And he said, well, we're going to play one. And I thought, well, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
So they're off to a strong start there. But everybody else, I mean, is in a decent enough position. If you're Clemson and you think, boy, our QB play stunk last year, well, I mean, that's the same guy we were talking about as a potential Heisman winner before the season started. I don't know that he is devoid of talent. And they've got a five-star freshman who's been on campus since the spring and could get some playing time too. It's just a very deep league. I think, you know, if you want to talk about ceiling and just the upside and the ability to potentially be a guy who throws 40-plus touchdowns and is in the Heisman race this year, I would probably say Van Dyke has the highest ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you look at a guy like Leary, and he's so good at what he does, and he doesn't make mistakes. And I think if you want to value that as being the key to the position of you've managed the two-minute drill great, you utilize all of your receivers and go through your progressions, you don't throw the ball away, like that's Devin Leary, and it's maybe not as sexy in the numbers by the end of the year, but I think you make a case he's the best. I think, you know, you look at a guy like Malik Cunningham, who I don't know that he is in any case the best passer, though. He throws a beautiful deep ball, but his athleticism is second really only to Lamar Jackson from what I've seen in the ACC in recent years. And he put up 39-plus touchdowns last
yep.
year and is a really darn good player. So I don't know. Pick your poison, man. Whatever you want to, whatever kind of constraints you want to put on how that you make that value judgment, there's probably somebody who fits it.
David Hale from ESPN.com is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. One more thing about the division prognostication that made me laugh, because I think you can justify a first-place vote for a lot of teams, but what I think you can't justify is a first-place vote for Georgia Tech or a first-place vote for Florida State. I just don't – I can't. I mean, Boston College, because of Djokovic and – BC should be really good on both lines, maybe, but I can't stretch my mind to the point where, yeah, Florida State could win the Atlantic or Georgia Tech could win the Coastal. I can't do that.
I think there are just some people out there who want to watch the world burn, you know, and they're bringing down the whole system from the inside.
Yeah.
And they sit there in their, you know, mom's basement, filling out their all ACC ballot, just chuckling like a madman about picking Georgia Tech, or maybe it's all just designed to make Jeff Collins look bad at the end of the year. See, we thought we believed in you, and you let us down again. No, I have a hard time. Look, I think Florida State could be a vastly improved team this year.
Sure.
That's one of the other things I was just talking about with Andrew. I think if you told me they won 9 games, I think means they probably pulled an upset or two, but I don't think they're going to be out of it at a lot of places this year. Georgia Tech, man, that schedule is tough, and they lost, I think, their best player in Jahmyr Gibbs, who transferred to Alabama. I just don't see it. Now, I think there's a lot of parity in the league this year, but yeah, those are two things that I would not be lining up to endorse.
David Hale is with us here on the Adam Gold Show. All right, to a serious topic. It's something that everybody had to talk about for basically all of the 2 days. I lamented the fact that we weren't talking as much football as we would have liked. But what are your thoughts on what the future? I know you talked about it, the future of the sport that you and Andrea cover so well, and that we talk about, you know, for basically half of the fall. If we're not talking about the NFL, we're probably talking about college football. What are your thoughts on the future?
Yeah, it's we're living in fascinating times. And we have a entire series we're going to run this week on ESPN.com. We have a story up today where we surveyed 200 ADs, administrators, coaches, players on what they think about the future. There was some stuff that was pretty uniformly predicted. It's things like direct player compensation. Most people think that is coming sooner than later. More realignment. Most people think that is coming sooner than later. There was some stuff that was all over the place in terms of what people thought was going to happen. What's the best playoff structure? Who should be handling NIL? I think it really goes to show what is my sort of biggest takeaway about what college football is dealing with right now, is that we are in a very unpleasant middle ground. We are living in gray area right now. And I don't think people like that. I don't think people in the sport like it. I don't think even the players like it. I don't fans don't like it. It feels like there is no foundation under people's feet, and there's nothing to sort of invest and buy into when that foundation is shifting all the time. One of the people I talked to in doing this story was Senator Chris Murphy from Connecticut, mm-hmm. who has been one of the biggest proponents of NIL and player compensation. And He put forth a bill on the Players' Bill of Rights. And he said, look, there has to be an end game here, because what people don't want is to live in this world, whether you like paying players or you don't, whether you like realignment or you don't, whatever it is, what people don't like is not having any idea what tomorrow is going to bring. And I think that's pretty clearly where we're at right now, is it feels very unstable. I think there is a path to stability. There's a path to making the game better, I think, and more, certainly more equitable. And I think you could make a case as you look at sort of the media landscape and say, well, what drives value? And live sports are at the top of the list. And as you point out, aside from the NFL, there's really not a sport that drives consumer interest and demand much more than college football. I think you could argue that it's a very undervalued commodity right now. There is a bright future for college football, but one of the single biggest bits of takeaway, the single most unified responses that I've heard from people is no one is captaining the ship. So you have a bunch of self-interested parties pulling in their own direction and no one who looks out for the greater good of college football. And I think, look, you've been dealt this great hand. It's hard to screw up college football because it's a great sport for many reasons. But I do worry, if everybody is just out for themselves, where does it take us as a whole in college football? And I think if you want to be a pessimist, that's where to start, because the NCAA is useless. The commissioners don't trust each other.
Right.
The TV networks are sort of hammering it out like heavyweights. To me, that is the big concern.
Well, you mentioned the greater good, because that was my takeaway from the commissioners forum a couple of weeks ago in Charlotte, that Jim Phillips, and he was ridiculed for his stance on this, but Jim Phillips, at least publicly, is looking out for the greater good. Now, that's also a position that is convenient if you are clearly way behind the Big Ten and the SEC. Right. I get it. I get all of that. But he did outwardly talk about, we need, you know, all of our neighborhoods to be healthy neighborhoods. And again, a convenient position to put yourself in when you can't catch those other two conferences. But with those two leagues and Kevin Warren going all in on even further expansion, like, dude, are you guys trying to kill the sport? Because just concentrating it in two spots isn't really good for the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so much to unpack from that. And I do agree with you. I mean, I think Jim Phillips is sort of the last true optimist about all of this. And I don't know if it's Pollyanna-ish or what, because I get it. If you're a fan and you say, hey, all this is great, what about the fact that my team can't compete because the Big Ten is giving their programs double what the ACC is getting?
Right.
I get that. I also think it's a problem to sort of hold up the amateur experience and education and academics and access for all these other sports that I think are genuinely good things, but that the NCAA and member institutions and commissioners have used as a complete straw man to ignore the obvious inequity of player compensation for a long time. So when you talk about these things, you know, the institutional fundamental underpinnings of what college football is supposed to be about, people have used those and wielded them in ways to sort of protect them from having hard conversations for way too long. And so I get why there is blowback from that, why there is frustration. The bottom line on this is that money drives everything. And that's, you know, we see that in every other walk of life. So I don't know whether we should ever be surprised by that being the case here in sports, but college sports in general is an industry that is unique in that, yes, of course money drives it. And yes, of course people want more and more. And everybody wants their fair share. But at the end of the day, there are supposed to be other priorities too. There are supposed to be other things that matter. And I always say, when you look at college football, it is quite clear to me that viewers and fans and audience across the country views it as something more than minor league football. They view it as something that has an inherent value apart from the obvious realization that these are not the best players in the world. Those are playing in the NFL. And the more that college football professionalizes itself in the chase of money, the more that they become a minor league NFL, I wonder what you lose in the interim. I wonder what gets lost because of that professionalization. because there is, you know, there is a reason that people like college football in a way that they don't like minor league baseball, or they don't watch the G League, and frankly, that they don't watch college basketball.
Right.
Yeah, so I think you really risk losing some of what that is the more you chase the dollars. But look, I'm not an idiot. I know the dollars are what drives everything.
Yeah, they do. And to that end, final question for David Hale, and I appreciate your time on Twitter at a David Hale joint. The ACC did not have a good year last year, and a lot of people will point to the fact that it was Wake Forest and Pitt playing for the title. I'm not using that, but that's what we heard. Well, if Wake's playing for the title, league couldn't have been all that great. How important is it for the league to be good this year?
I would argue this is the single most important thing, because we have all these conversations. What can Jim Phillips do? What are we going to do to ease the revenue gap, the disparities? What's going to happen? The fact of the matter is he's playing to an inside straight on almost every avenue. But the one thing that the ACC can control is its own product. It can make its own product better. And for a while, it has not been. And look, here's the thing. If NC State's bowl game doesn't get canceled last year, there is a good chance that the league ended up with four 10-win teams last year. That's pretty good. But who those four 10-win teams were mattered, and it wasn't Miami, it wasn't Florida State, it wasn't Virginia Tech, it wasn't Louisville. And then you look at sort of how the season progressed. And the ACC's non-conference record over the last few years is abhorrent. And even teams that were really good, like NC State, just lay a complete egg against Mississippi State. Or Pittsburgh loses to Western Michigan. Mm. You just can't have these things happen. Right. They need the brand names to play like brand names. They need to win games out of conference. And at the end of the year, if there's three or four teams that are in that 10-win range, then they get some respect. Then they can go to ESPN and say, like, hey, our existence matters. We are worth more than you're paying us. Let's work something out. Right now, they just don't have a card to play because the league just has not been that good.
No question about it. I've been saying it for a long time, and it seems like the last two television negotiations, they had one good team. It was Clemson most recently. Before that, it was Florida State, and we have yet to have all the brand name schools playing at a high level at the same time. At David Hale, at a David Hale joint on Twitter, David Hale from ESPN.com. Thank you very much, man. We'll talk again very soon. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You got it, David Hale. That was good. That time flies. Let's get to halftime. Then we get to place our bets.
And now, your halftime entertainment.
About three on the board today. Not bad.
Speaking of soccer, 87,192 people attended the Euro Women's Championship at Wembley Stadium.
So we had 87,000, a record for the Women's Euro, which was a fantastic match. And there was almost 94,000 at the Rose Bowl for Real Madrid and Juventus.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I did not know that.
For a freaking friendly. Awesome.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, I watched a lot of soccer this weekend. A lot. My son is so mad.
I saw Liverpool beat Man City.
Yeah, they played for the Community Shield.
Yeah, look, they won the Shield.
Is it a big deal? I don't know. The reaction of Liverpool made it seem like a big deal. Community Shield in the UK is whoever won the Premier League and whoever won the FA Cup. The FA Cup is the top domestic in-season tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, the Champions League is the top tournament in Europe, and you could argue that the Champions League to many is more important than even the Premier League. Mm-hmm. But the FA Cup winner, which was Liverpool, and the Premier League champ, which was Man City, they played for the Community Shield, and Liverpool, 3-1 winner. They were the better side, but it was City definitely had their chances, absolutely had their chances. But eye-opening stuff from Darwin Nunez, who I think is just going to be an absolute stud for Liverpool. Absolute stud.
Yeah, but I was reading how a lot of people were very high on him and the performance that he put together.
Yeah, he was great. Erling Haaland, not so great for Man City. But you know he's going to be. He's going to score tons of goals. He's giant. He's like a Norse god.
All right. You
know, Haaland is just amazing.
Looks like Massachusetts is on its way to legalizing sports betting.
Yes, I saw this today.
Yeah.
You can't wager on college sports within the state.
Okay.
But, which of course is silly, but whatever. But at least they can bet on their phone.
Yeah. Well, I know in Virginia you're not allowed to bet on college games in the state.
Also silly, but whatever. The people who make decisions don't fully understand what they're voting. Mm-hmm. They just don't. Because if you understood what you were voting, then you would just say, oh, okay, that's fine. But yeah. They don't. We're stuck in the 1950s, and we're stuck on silly morality plays when, last I checked, you could buy beer.
Yeah. Cigarettes.
And cigarettes, and what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing, people? But look, at least they can wager on something on sports in Massachusetts, unlike here.
We're not bitter.
I know, I'm just tired. I'm tired of being dumb. And that's what we are here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just don't understand it. I don't want to get on the whole soapbox about it, but there's zero reason that we cannot wager on sports in the state of North Carolina unless you physically go to Cherokee. Zero reason.
Yeah.
But whatever.
All right. As I mentioned last week about how people actually were able to buy some Sony PS5s and PlayStation 5s, despite having the troubles of getting the hardware to assemble PlayStations, Sony that is, they still have shipped out over 21.7 million units worldwide.
Excuse you?
Yeah.
That sounds like a lot.
It is a lot. I mean, just in the first quarter of this year, they shipped out over 2.4 million.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Yes.
Yeah, again, in spite of all those shortages, the PS5 still going out there strong. I actually saw it, so I was at GalaxyCon. This will lead into my next thing. So at GalaxyCon, there were some different vendors that would sell retro games and things along those lines, which was really cool to see because you can go back and if you have an old gaming console, you can maybe go buy some old games, whatever it may be. I was very close to buying the original Game Boy, like the gray, the gray brick, as I like to call it. And Zelda, I almost bought that. But someone, actually one of those gaming vendors, was selling a PS5. I was like, didn't even look at the price tag. I knew it'd be too expensive for me.
So my wife was browsing through, I think, Facebook Marketplace or something like that. And somebody was selling the old Atari.
Yeah.
With it's like the brown console. It almost looks like wood paneling with the slot to stick the cartridge in the middle. And it came with like something like 15 different games.
Nice.
That's the game console that I had the last time I played video games at home. So I think I was, I don't know, 14 when I had it. But yes, so we were talking about it. Space Invaders.
Nice.
Just whatever the games were that we played.
Little Asteroids.
Asteroids. It was just
all Centipede.
I think they were all there. All of those games were there. Like, I played the downhill skiing game.
Yeah.
Which was so basic. I mean, the most basic thing ever. But downhill skiing is slalom, the whole thing. But just tremendous stuff.
You know what? At GalaxyCon, I saw a couple of those. People were selling them.
Did you really?
Yeah, some of those retro gaming spots.
So how was it?
It was a good time.
Yeah?
It was a good time.
See people in costume?
A lot of people in costume.
I'm sure they were.
A lot of people. Stranger Things was the hot costume item.
So
a lot of Stranger Things.
Take a picture with Kevin Smith?
Yeah, I did. That was actually a fun experience.
How was it? Tell me about it.
So when you do a photo with a celebrity, like the ones you have to like set up in advance,
right,
as opposed to just going to their table and hopefully you can snap a photo. Some will do that, but a lot of the bigger guests, you have to in advance pay for to do that.
Okay.
But it's cool because you get actually professional 8x10 and a digital copy of your photo. So I was wearing a T-shirt. This is a little bit deep dive industry cut into the comic book business. I was wearing a T-shirt that looked like a Ninja Turtles logo, but it said "The Man Without Fear, Daredevil." Well, Daredevil was the basis for what the Ninja Turtles was created. So Kevin Smith looks at my shirt. Kevin Smith has actually written some Daredevil comics.
Oh, okay.
Which was really cool. So he sees my shirt. He goes, "That shirt is awesome." He goes, "I appreciate and respect that shirt. That's some deep cut industry stuff, man." So he's very, very excited about my shirt. And he's
gosh.
"I really appreciate you wearing that.
You feel 10 feet tall."
He gave me a hug. I did. I did. He gave me a hug, which is great. But anyway, so we take the photo. We're going to take the photo. I say, "Hey, just real quick, I have one rule for the photo." And he's like, "Yeah, sure, whatever you need." And I said, "No smiling."
Why did you say no smiling?
No smiling. Because everyone else is going, you know, cheesing it up or whatever, like doing goofy stuff. I said, "No smiling." And he goes, "Okay. This is going to be difficult for me, but I'm going to do my best." So we take the photo. Neither of us are smiling. And he's so caught up in the fact that no smiling is after the photo is taken. He goes, "We got to go take a look at this right away." So he immediately runs to the camera person. He's like, "Come on, look at this with me." And he looks at it. He's like, "Man, this is great. I've never had someone tell me no smiling before for a photo." So he's very excited about that.
Very nice.
Yeah, I was like, but that's the reason why you do no smiling, because no one else does it. And that's what makes it fun.
Beautiful. So, yeah. I like it. I'm glad you had a good time.
Yeah, he actually filled us in. I went to his Q&A as well, and he actually filled us in on some different projects that he actually had pitched. So you know the movie Night of the Museum?
Yeah, I love those movies.
Okay.
I can't believe I just admitted that out loud. But
that's totally fine.
I love those movies.
He was basically, he had pitched and it was in very late stages of discussing with Disney, basically a Night at the Museum, but if you're at Disney World and like the characters and stuff come to light afterwards.
It's a complete ripoff of Night at the Museum.
Well, yeah, but it kind of was. But he says he wanted to make Hook the villain. So Hook like realized that on Space Mountain, like whatever, that you can actually... wait, I don't have to do the same thing every time, and then realizes there's this whole other world out there.
Oh, wow.
And so he wanted to, like, actually try and become, like, a real boy or, like, a real person. So kind of, like, tying in Pinocchio.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so he wanted to do that, but I guess some people at Disney were like, "No, it's too much IP, too much intellectual property and all that stuff." So, and he also says he has an idea of a script already written for Mallrats, too.
Gosh.
Yeah, which would be, it's actually...
Did that really need to be...
No,
well,
but
maybe
it's,
it did. Maybe it did.
It's funny. It's interesting because Jason Lee's character from that movie in the Jay and Silent Bob reboot actually opened his own comic shop in that same mall.
Gotcha.
So he's like the one guy that doesn't want to let the mall die, but divorces his wife. Or like he and his wife got a divorce, so he's actually... because no one really goes to the mall anymore, is that when he closes up, he just sneaks through the wall into, like, the bedding store and just sleeps in the beds.
Oh, wow.
In the whatever mattress store, whatever it is. So he's like, he literally has become a mall rat because he lives in the walls of the mall.
Very nice.
So, yeah, that's all I got today.
That's fine. That's quality.
It was a fun time. It was a fun moment. It was good.
Did you guys exchange phone numbers?
No. We might, though.
Okay.
I posted on Twitter the picture of me and him.
Right.
And he liked it.
Oh, look at you.
So, yeah.
Did he follow you?
Not yet.
Oh, man.
I'm hoping for it.
It's coming.
The Clerks 3 movie that is coming out, they're doing a tour with it, going to a lot of different cities across North America, and I believe it's in October. They're coming to both Charlotte and Durham.
Nice.
For screenings. And Kevin Smith and the cast are all coming along, so you can actually... watch the film with them, and they'll do
Randall?
Different stuff.
Randall coming?
Yeah. Like that, the whole cast was there.
Very nice.
Randall, Dante, they're all there. It was a good time.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, good for you.
I think the fact that most mattresses are built to sustain a weight of 250 pounds is BS. I was ready for a change. I love that the Big Fig mattress supports up to 1,100 pounds. So if you and your partner are both curvier, if you and your partner are both larger framed, they're supporting you. It's so important for me to tell the world about brands that are truly seeing us as a community. And I love that Big Fig does that.
Big Fig is the company that believes that everybody and every body deserves a great night's sleep. Learn more at bigfigmattress.com.
Your bets. Do you? I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Death! Okay, you can owe me. I owe you one.
Excellent. All right, Dennis Cox, let's do this.
All right.
I did so poorly this weekend.
I was only a minus 65.
It's not bad.
I won a few, obviously lost a few.
I lost a bunch.
Only minus 65 for me.
I lost a bunch.
Anthony Rizzo hits a home run today, plus 360.
Anthony Rizzo to homer today.
They're playing Seattle.
They are playing Seattle. I just might have some action there.
Okay.
Why not?
Go for it.
Give me the Mariners outright, plus 153 in the Bronx. Yankees trailed, if I'm not mistaken, they trailed 4-3. Was it 4-3? No, it was... It was 3-1, I think, the Yankees trailed in the seventh. And Anthony Rizzo, well, the scores kind of all run together. Yankees took a two-run lead in the seventh inning on a Rizzo three-run home run. And then the Royals stormed back, I think scoring like three times in the eighth, ended up winning at 8-6. It's a wild, wild game yesterday. So good for the Royals, I guess.
Okay.
That's all I got.
I'm going to put an NFL future bet out here.
I like it.
I'm going to put out any player to break the record for most passing touchdowns in the regular season. So that's over 55 and a half.
Over 55 and a half. And what is the
plus 1,000.
Oh, that's it?
Yeah.
To go for somebody to get at least 56 touchdown passes?
Yeah. Plus 1,000.
17 game season. We're still talking about an average of more than three a game.
Yeah. The passing league.
Gosh. It is a passing league. All right, look, I'm here for it. I'm here for something like that. All right, we're going to go to baseball. We went against one New York team. Mets are in Washington today. Max Scherzer is pitching. But I'm going to go Francisco Lindor to score two runs or more at plus 650. Lindor to score twice at plus 650.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. I'm trying to make a lot of the losses back this week. Right today.
Yeah. I say so, go for it.
I'm still plus over 3,000, but
you are.
I'm probably down about, well, I don't know, 1,400 in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah. It's okay. You're doing fine.
Thank you.
You're doing fine. All right. Four game Major League Baseball parlay. Padres win, Dodgers win, Mets win, Astros win, plus 460.
Wait. Padres, Dodgers, Astros, Mets.
Yep.
14 parlay. How much is that?
Plus 460.
All right. Good. I wish you good luck on that. Seven game parlays didn't work for you.
Yeah, stupid Blue Jays. I hate them now. They stink. They get out of here.
They lost to the Tigers.
Like, I know.
That might have been the biggest long shot on the board.
Yeah, I think it was, actually.
They were plus three something.
Gosh.
My gosh. Can't, see, this is why you don't bet baseball. This is why you don't bet baseball, because and he says after taking the Mariners at plus 153, is because the best teams in the league are going to lose 60 games.
Yeah.
60. The worst teams in the league are going to win 60. And there's no rhyme or reason why. Plus, almost every game, I shouldn't say almost every game, too many games come down to a pitch. Seriously.
Mm-hmm.
That tips the balance one way or the other. All right. I didn't get a lot of success doing this last week, but boy, I watched a lot of soccer. I am ready for the start of the Premier League on Friday. Arsenal
Crystal Palace. I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, you
let's
are.
Do it. Let's do it. And Liverpool, my side, makes a visit to Craven Cottage to take on Fulham, just bumped up from the Championship. That will be their opener Saturday morning. I got to get up at 7:30 to watch that one.
Oh, no. But poor thing.
Because the Championship has already started. We've got an EFL game today, a match today. Watford, who is coming down from the Premier League, Sheffield United is on the road at Watford, and we are going to take that as a draw at plus 210. Watford, Sheffield United to draw.
I see it at plus 230.
I'll take 230.
There you go.
I like it as plus 230. So there you go. I am ready. I've got my my EPL fantasy team dialed in.
I'm sure you do.
Driving my son nuts.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
With classes in crisis communication, influence, and data presentation, Gonzaga University's online Master's in Communication and Leadership equips you with the tools you need to communicate clearly and encourage creativity in any industry. Concentrations in digital media, strategic communication, and global leadership allow you to customize your degree. Visit gonzaga.edu/communication and learn why a master's degree from Gonzaga can help you take your career to the next level. That's gonzaga.edu/communication.